Thank you. This is a sensitive topic. The role of women, according to halacha, is a hot-button issue for our communities today, and is one which I approach with a certain amount of caution. I would like today to just identify some of the general issues and give an overview as to some of the topics and some of the shitos and some of the considerations. The purpose of today's session is not to give necessarily a bottom line ruling halacha lemaisa with respect to some of these thorny issues, but to open up everyone's eyes with respect to the range of considerations, the range of implications, and the range of different views and categories that need to be studied and need to be carefully considered when approaching this topic. It goes without saying that the Torah and the laws of the Torah are immutable. And when we discuss some of the inyanim that have cropped up in modern times, it is, of course, a question of how do we apply age-old, timeless Torah principles to new situations or to a changing world. And it has been a changing world. We know that the role of women in general society has become a different role over the course of the last century in particular. Women have assumed much more of a public role in the secular world. It is now much more commonplace for women, for example, to serve in similar professional capacities as men. Women can be found as the CEOs of corporations and as partners in law firms, and it is not uncommon for women to get up and to play public roles and to address public gatherings. And the question is, to what degree does halacha have a different type of role or have different limitations when it comes to the public role of women? And this relates to a whole host of modern day topics specifically relating to the religious roles of women in the community. There was some controversy engendered even last year about providing some type of title or some type of a status that kind of sounded a little bit like ordination with respect to women who had studied and achieved a certain degree of proficiency in Torah. The question also relates to women who studied to become proficient in an area of halacha and might be appointed according to the new program that exists in Eretz Yisrael to be Yoatzot, and how do we deal with that question. It pertains to the role of women on synagogue boards. Can a woman be a president of a synagogue? Can a woman be a vice president? Can a woman sit on a board? What other public positions are possible or even to be encouraged or discouraged from the perspective of halacha? And it is important, at least from a rabbinic perspective, from a halakhic perspective, to analyze the sources and to see exactly what the sources say. And one important fact that we discover in analyzing the sources is that, at least with respect to some of these issues, maybe one of the reasons why you will find a range of different opinions and nuances is because there is, in fact, some ambiguity in the sources and in the question of what opinions are normative from the perspective of halacha. And at the same time, there are also some very clear rules as well. So the first source to look at is the pasuk in Devarim, which says, "Som tasim alecha melech, asher yivchar Hashem elkecha bo mikerev achecha tasim alecha melech lo suchal laseis alecha ish nachri asher lo achicha hu." And the Medrash Sifri derives from the word melech, that when you appoint a monarch, you appoint a king, you are supposed to appoint a king and not appoint a queen. The halacha is melech v'lo malko. However, the Rambam goes a step further, and the Rambam says that ein ma'amidin isha b'malkos, shenema alecha melech v'lo malko. The Rambam says that we, first of all, do not appoint a woman to be a malka. You only appoint a melech, a male, a king. But then the Rambam goes on to say, that so too this applies to all positions of authority within the Jewish community, that we only apply, we only appoint a man to be the head of any type of leadership position and not a woman. And the question is, where did the Rambam get this from? So some suggest this is a psikta zutarta, that there is a less well-known medrash from the normal midrashim that we are accustomed to that has such a limud, but this was not a well-publicized limud. And in fact, as early as the past century, when the Igros Moshe, or Moshe Feinstein, wrote his Tshuvos, he wrote that he was not aware of a clear source of this statement in the Rambam. I found upon some research that this Midrash of the Rambam appears as well in a Midrash Tanoim, which is attributed, I believe, to Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. But be it as it may, some of these Midrashim did not necessarily appear as early on as some of the other classical Midrashim that we know about. And in any event, it appears that not everybody extended this limitation on the appointment of a woman to a position of authority beyond the position of monarch. And in fact, in the Sefer HaChinuch, when the Sefer HaChinuch talks about the limitation of positions and the application of the position of king, the Sefer HaChinuch only says that there's a limitation of Melech below Malka, does not apply this limitation to women's leadership to other roles beyond Melech, despite the fact that when it comes to the inheritance of positions of authority, the Sefer HaChinuch in the very same mitzvah applies all of the rules that are pertinent to Melucha to all other positions of leadership. So it's clear that to the degree that whatever limudim are applicable to Melech are applicable to other positions of leadership and authority, the Sefer HaChinuch in fact made that extrapolation, but very clearly does not make that extrapolation with respect to the mitzvah of appointing a king, saying that there the limitation to a woman only applies to Malka, only applies to the position of king and not a queen, and is not in fact extended any further. So based on this, Rav Moshe Feinstein launches into a discussion. This is in the Igros Moshe, Chelek in Yoredea, Chelek Beis, Simen Mem Dalid, in which he quotes the Sefer HaChinuch, which is Mitzvah Tapit Sadi Zayin, end quotes the Rambam, and deals with the following question. There was a man who served, a rabbi who served as a mashgiach, and he made a nice parnosa out of being a mashgiach, out of being a kosher supervisor, and then the rabbi died, leaving behind a widow. And the widow was very well versed in terms of the hashkacha business, and would very much have wanted to carry on the business of her husband in order to be able to continue to make a parnasa. And there really was a desire to try to provide for this amana so that she would be able to get on with her life. But the question arose as to whether it was appropriate for her to assume her late husband's position as mashgiach, or whether this was considered to be a position of sarara, of leadership, along the lines of what the Rambam describes as kol mesimos shebi Yisrael, that would be off limits to a woman. And Rav Moshe says there are two levels to the inquiry. The first level to the inquiry is what exactly constitutes a position of sarara, of leadership or authority. And the second question is, if in fact something is sarara, is it off limits to a woman? So with respect to the first question, Rav Moshe defines sarara as whenever a person is in a position where they can act contrary to the wishes of the balabatim, where they can impose their will upon those who have appointed them to act in a fashion that the balabatim would not otherwise want. So that, says Rav Moshe, is a definition of a sarara, and it doesn't matter how lofty or grandiose the position happens to be. And therefore, even a mashgicha, even serving as a kasher supervisor, constitutes a position of sarara, of authority, because there is the ability to say to the owners of the food that you are not allowed to serve this food, you must serve different food, you're not allowed to engage in this practice, you have to engage in a different practice in order to ensure that the food will be kosher, and therefore that a position of mashgiach or mashgicha, where you can act keneged ratzon balei habayis, where you can act keneged ratzon the balabatim, is considered to be a position of sarara according to Rav Moshe, and therefore according to the Rambam would be off limits to women. However, the Rav Moshe goes further, and he says, we see that the Rambam really was not a majority shita. It's not entirely clear, as we mentioned earlier, even where he got the source from, that the prohibition applies to all positions of leadership. And in fact, we see from the Chinuch that the Sefer HaChinuch held that the limitation on women is only restricted to the Malchus, and therefore, he is also of the position Rashi, Tosfos, and others do not hold like the Rambam, brings various proofs. And since the Rambam is a minority position, says Rav Moshe, if one really had a shas hadchak, in which it was important to provide a position to a woman, one would be allowed, he says, to rely upon the other shitos. But he throws in a very important nekuda with respect to this discussion, which is that absent such a tzorach gadol, one should certainly take the appropriate steps to comply with the shita sarambam, and therefore he makes the creative suggestion that in order to comply with the shita of the Rambam, there's a very simple fix, which is to have a rav who is officially in charge. That rav would be officially in charge of the woman. The woman would officially report to the rav. So even though the woman is really using her expertise, even though she really is doing all the work, since it's the rav who ultimately makes all the calls and makes all the decisions that could go against the will of those who are making the appointment of a mashgiach, therefore, that would not be a violation of the prohibition of a woman assuming sarara, even according to the Rambam. Rav Moshe was subsequently questioned by the editor of the Torah journal HaMa'or. He addresses this challenge in the next tshuva, which is Simon Mem Hei, and the editor of the journal basically indicated that there was a danger as a result of Moshe's tshuva that it would result in perhaps a breakdown of standards and traditions, because he was suggesting that maybe leadership positions in general outside of the monarchy, of which we don't really have kings and queens nowadays, that basically nothing would be off limits to a woman according to the Ikar Hadin, other than an effort to certainly comply with the Rambam as well. And therefore, this was something that was not a proper message to send to the community. Rav Moshe responded basically by stating that he was not cowed by such sentiments based on a general emotion or general sentiment of the community, but rather was only grounded in halakhic sources. And if the halakhic sources indicate that the Rambam is not the majority shita, it is therefore his obligation to note that. And he goes further and says that, let's say you had two candidates for a sarara position, and one was a worthy woman, female candidate, and the other was a male candidate who was not frum, who was not shomer mitzvos. So he said that for sure it would follow that even if you held like the Rambam, for sure you should give the position to an eligible, God-fearing woman. If she's the only worthy candidate, then to give it to a male who is not in fact a shomer mitzvos, who is not a proper a Torah personality in terms of giving out such a position, just like with respect to the Malchus, even though it goes b'Yerusha, if a person is not memale makom, he does not have a yira shemayim, then he can't be appointed as a melech, and therefore the same would apply to sarara positions as well. And Rav Moshe reiterates basically his position that that in the case of Tzorach Gadol, one would be able to rely on the Shitos other than the Rambam, but obviously in this case, all is fine and good because one is able to be Mekayim Shneim, since by the appointment of a Rav, the woman would not officially be in a position of Sarara. In the course of this latter conversation, Rav Moshe addresses a critique that as a result of the tshuva that he had written, perhaps now Medinas Yisrael would appoint a president to be in charge of the Medina, and this was very dangerous. So Rav Moshe said that, if you may have noticed, then the Medinas Yisrael is not necessarily governed according to rules of halacha anyway. They're not exactly calling me every single day, and therefore if they appointed somebody who was not a male, that would not be as a result of my tshuva. And then he goes further and addresses another concern about presidents of synagogues, that maybe as a result of his tshuva, a woman might be appointed as the president of the synagogue. And Rav Moshe says something which I think is potentially more cryptic than how it is generally represented, which is that Rav Moshe does not necessarily come out and say that being president of a synagogue is clearly a srora, but what Rav Moshe, and therefore would be off limits if we're holding like the Rambam, but what he says is, I'm not really worried, because decisions made concerning a shul will presumably be made by the Rav of the shul, and the Rav will follow halakhic principles, and he leaves it at that. Which, of course, begs the question, is being president of the synagogue a srora, assuming that one does try to be machmir for the position of the Rambam, as Rav Moshe himself says, that one should ideally follow the recommendation and the shita, of the Rambam with respect to not appointing a woman to any position of srora. Is being president of a shul a position of srora? What about being a board member of a shul? What about even being rabbi of a shul? Where do we draw the line with respect to srora per se? So with respect to being president of a synagogue, it's interesting because this question arose in the context of a ger, because a ger is also not supposed to be appointed. It says, Mikerav Achecha, that a ger is not supposed to be appointed to a position of srara. This is a much more clearly accessible medrash and halakhic principle. And the question, it would be arose a number of years ago, could you appoint somebody who is a ger to become president of a synagogue? And it's interesting because two different members of the Beis Din in Philadelphia separately wrote upon this issue with conflicting conclusions. One was Rav Dov Aaron Brisman, who wrote a tshuva about this in his Sefer Shalmei Chova, in which he writes, and it's important to note that he does also make the observation that the Gemara in Kiddushin indicates that there might be special latitude in terms of how we define the limitation of srava for a ger, when in fact a ger is, say, sharing the leadership positions with another individual, and perhaps that same latitude is not does not exist with respect to how we define srora with respect to a woman. However, some of his broader arguments as to why he concludes that being the president of a shul does not generally or automatically constitute srora would be applicable to general srora principles as well. And basically what he argues is that, number one, the minoy, unlike the a normal srora position, which according to rabbinic tradition, which would be a position for life, is only for a circumscribed period of years. Number two, there's the ability of the congregation to remove the president at any point in time. And number three, the powers that a president of a synagogue have are very circumscribed, and it's impossible for a president to be able to do anything without getting the consent of the board, and sometimes even needs the votes of the majority of the shul population. And for this reason, as together with others, came to the conclusion it was not srora, although he does note appropriately that it depends upon the koach hanasi beiz amakom, what the powers, respective powers of a president might be in an individual congregation. There might be some congregations where being the president is, first of all, president for life. We know of such congregations, and also where a president doesn't really function based on the blessings of a board, but makes decisions unilaterally and is able to do lots of things by himself. And in fact, I'll take the question in a moment, of Aaron Felder in his Sefer Shelas Aaron, dealing, Chelek Beis, dealing with the very same question, came to the conclusion that a convert could not be appointed to the position of president of a synagogue, because, as he writes, that gam yesh kfiyo srora sheyesh lo koch reshus lahotzi lepoel ezach lotos b'liv lis yaitzei tzimana hala. that there is some power, at least with respect to certain areas of decision-making, he's assuming that a president of a synagogue would be able to make without further consultation. So again, it might really depend, according to this machlokish, shall we say, upon the reality and nature of the position as to whether there is built into a particular presidency this type of authority, whether there isn't built into this type of presidency that type of authority. And again, with respect to women, one also has to factor in the degree to which the Rambam is binding and to the degree to which you really have a tzorach gadol situation, particularly if the most qualified person who is able to serve or willing to serve, as the case might be a woman, then there might in fact be certain flexibility. There's a scholar by the name of Aryeh Frimer in Eretz Yisrael who has written extensively upon this topic and who has published papers which you could probably get on the internet, detailing various conversations he has had with different figures about this issue, including Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, including Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, indicating that sometimes, depending upon the needs of the community, there certainly are shitos that would consider flexibility with respect to this issue. Rav Soloveitchik was the Rav, is reputed as not feeling that a woman could assume the position of srora of the presidency, that the presidency would be off limits. There are different versions of this statement of the Rav, because it is a report. You could find one version of this conversation in Rav Schechter's latest Sefer Kavod HaRav at the end of the Kunteris Binyani Psak Halacha. You could find another version with respect to the writings of Rav Aryeh Frimer. But there is another possible reason why the Rav may have held that the presidency of a synagogue would be off limits to a woman. And that is, I'm sorry, you had your hand up before.
So you mentioned that if each show is considered a different case.
So I'm sorry, which is?
Each show is presumably a different case depending on how much power they give to the president.
With respect to the particular question of how much authority a president actually has.
So that should also be for the rabbis. Some shows do not give any power to the rabbis.
Ah, so we're going to get to rabbis shortly. Let's go one step at a time because we have a lot of ground to cover. I don't actually know if we're going to cover all of the ground. But you have in your Mara Mekoma sheets many, many different areas of discussion. I don't want to run past any one of them. I want to give each one its due deference. So we'll see how much we're able to cover in the time that we have. So the Rav might also have had another consideration with respect to the presidency of a synagogue, and that is that there is a discussion in the Sefer on Yoredeya, which was compiled by our own Rav Yochim Konigsberg, of the Rav Shiurim with respect to Yoredeya. And there is a halacha that the Rav spoke about at the very beginning of Yoredeya about whether or not a woman is allowed to be a shochetet. So mi'ikar adin, a woman can shecht. But the Rama writes that our practice is that a woman does not serve as a shochet. And this appears to, in fact, be the minog. We've never seen that a woman never shechs. And the shach, we've never seen that a woman shechs. And the shach quotes from the Beis Yosef that there's a general principle of lo ra'inu eino raya. The fact that we haven't seen that something has occurred is not a raya that it can't be done. But the shach himself says that when it comes to the common community practices when it comes to minhagim, you can, in his opinion, actually invoke the principle of lo ra'inu eino raya, and therefore it substantiates the psak of the Ramah that a woman does not serve as a shochet. And the Rav says that the Rav is quoted in his shiurim in the Sefer, which is also in your materials, as explaining that conceptually there's something else going on over here, which is that Me'ikar Adin in the Gemara, yes, it's very clear, Hakol Shochtin, including Nashim, that women are allowed to shecht, but that's because in the olden days, women would just, everybody would just shecht in their own backyards, because people just bought animals and they shechted the animals and they learned Hilchos Shechita, and those who mastered it would shecht, and it wasn't necessarily a public position. What happened over the centuries was that you had less and less people who are proficient in Shechita. Most Rabbanim who receive smicha nowadays are not proficient in how to shecht. It would be a position of prominence in a particular community for somebody to be appointed as the shochet. You'd have people who are appointed as a shochet or as shochet ubodek. This was an important community position. And the Rav explains that if you look at even the Lashon of the Rambam in terms of what was quoted, v'chein kol mesima sheb'Yisrael, ein memanim bahem eliish, he explains that it's not only a question of Sarara being off limits to a woman, it's a question of being memana a woman to any position that requires an appointment. Even if a position does not have actual Sarara authority, but nonetheless is a position of minoy hakahal, a position where the community needs to appoint someone to a particular position, then this the halacha indicates that this would be off limits to a woman. It could be that this is based not only on the simple Xeris HaKasuv Svara considerations, but is also based upon the special role of Tznius, which is played by a woman. We know that there's a principle of Kol Kibuda Bas Melech Pinima. There are halachos that are based on the principle of Kol Kibuda Bas Melech Pinima. The Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Ayin Vav says that when there was the big debate as to whether David HaMelech was legitimate because he came from a Moabita, a woman, and Doeg Hadomi was arguing the case that both a Moabi and Moabis were off limits, and and Avner Ben Ner argued the other case in favor, that it was only a Moabi that was off limits, but a Moabis who converts to Judaism is not off limits. And the Gemara says that there was the argument that was brought by Avner was that the reason why the Moabim were not allowed to marry even upon conversion into the Jewish people was because that when the Jews were passing through Moab, the men did not come out to greet them with water and with bread, and it is derech ha'isha, it is the nature of men to go out v'ein derech ha'isha, but it is not the derech ha'isha l'kadem to go out and to greet strangers in the street, therefore the halacha should be limited to men because only they acted wrongly, but the woman did nothing wrong by staying at home and not running out to the street to offer bread and water. And Doe came back and said, no, the woman should have come out to greet the women, just like the men were going out to greet the men. And there was no immediate answer, but then the Gemara concludes that there is an answer. What's the answer? The answer is that even to greet women to run outside is just not something which is fitting or appropriate or expected with respect to women, because Kol Kibuda Bas Melech Penima, because there is an extra measure of tznius which is required or expected of women. And even if they don't necessarily want, or even if they don't necessarily consider it to be a very Bas Melech kind of principle, because the Pasuk says that this is the glory of princesses to be within. So even if they say, well, I want to be a princess who goes without, it is not necessarily within their purview or prerogative to do so. There's even a striking, I only mention it because it's there, there's even a striking Rashi on the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Kuf Amud Beis, that talks about the Asara Klolos Sheniska Lochava, the 10 klolos that Chava suffered when she ate from the Eitz Hadas, and one of them is that a woman is chabusha bebeisa asurin, that she so sometimes is more insulated, and closed up, shall we say, that she herself would want to be. And Rashi just says matter-of-factly on that Gemara, on chabusha bebeisa asurin, Rashi says, yeah, kol kibuda bas melech penima. So this is a principle that is intended for the glorification of women, but even if it's not something which is necessarily always desired, it is a part of what is the halachic community as defined by the norms spelled out in the Torah. And therefore, it could be that this limitation as well with respect to Minoy, as articulated by the Rav, stems in part upon such a consideration. But it would follow according to this recordation of the shir of the Rav anyway, that even if you could argue that serving as a shul president is not a position of sorora, of real authority, and even if the president did not have any discretionary authority at all, it still could be off limits, according to the Rav, based on the consideration of minoy, that it is a position of appointment by the community. Reportedly, the Rav also did not subscribe to the notion of women being vice presidents, because if you're a vice president, that means you're next in line to be appointed president if the president should step aside. And there are different accounts of what the Rav's view was with respect to women serving as board members, with one account saying the Rav found no problem with that, and another account saying the Rav really was not in favor of it. But when people did it, the Rav didn't want to make a machlokas after the fact, and therefore indicated a possible support for that position. So that remains a question. On the other hand, there's a nice lengthy article on the question of women serving as members of a synagogue board, authored by, again, our own Rabbi Bleich, in his second volume of Contemporary Halakhic Problems, pages 253 to 267, I think, in which, towards the conclusion of the article, he suggests that maybe serving on a board where you can't really do anything by yourself, and even the board together really serves at the whim of the community, then maybe that's what we might call a sorora shel kavod. I'm translating from the English, a position of authority that is not really one with any power, but just one which is conferred with respect, or to confer respect and honor upon somebody, and that it could be that this type of sorora would certainly not be off limits to a woman. At least one could potentially make that argument, as suggested in the article, although I don't think that the article was intended to articulate any absolute conclusions either. So this is in the range of a synagogue life. There is also a tshuva by the Leib Aryeh, Rav Aryeh Grossnuss, Dayan Grossnuss, Chelek Beis, I believe, Simen Chabab, in which he talks about whether a woman is allowed to be a principal of a school. And he writes his tshuva specifically with respect to Limudei Chol, with respect to being a secular principal, but then says at the end that the same considerations would apply to being a principal of Limudei Kodesh as well. And basically he says that a principal of a school certainly is handcuffed in terms of being able to do anything of real authority without having a general consent and general approval of the board, and therefore did not consider this to be sorora either, and thought that this would be perfectly permissible for a woman to assume that role. If it would be sorora, he says that he doesn't think there would be a distinction between a woman being a principal of a school of only women, although in the footnote, presumably penned by Rabbi Konigsberg in the Sefer of the Rav on Yoredeya, he makes a suggestion that maybe having a position of authority over women, it would not be considered to be sorora, because a congregation of women is not considered to be a kehillah, just as you couldn't have 10 women, for example, coming together to invoke the usage of the Shem Hashem for Zimin purposes, Trei Kameah. So therefore, that appears to be a little bit of a machlokis as to whether any sorora limitations would be placed upon those categories. But one of the tshuvas on the subject of how we define sorora is actually found also in the Igros Moshe with respect to Eger, although he makes a comparison within that tshuva to the limitation of sorora on a ger and the limitation of sorora on a woman, and that is with respect to whether a ger is allowed to be appointed as a Rebbe or a Rosh Yeshiva. And Rav Moshe, this is in Chelek Yoredeya Dalet Chavav, Rav Moshe comes to the conclusion that serving as a Rosh Yeshiva is not, in fact, a position of sorora for these purposes, because a Rosh Yeshiva is not acting against the Baal HaBatim, is just kind of dealing with his poalim. dealing with his workers, might be able to hire or fire a particular Rebbe or hire or bring in or expel a particular student, but that's not necessarily going against the Baal HaBatim. And therefore, a position of a Rosh Yeshiva is not in the category of Srara and would not be off limits to a Ger. So if the position of Rosh Yeshiva is not off limits to a Ger, it sounds like the position of receiving Smicha is not off limits to a Ger, despite the limitation of Srara. Indeed, it has been traditionally the practice at Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchok Elchanan that we do confer smicha upon geirim. This is not necessarily a universal practice. Rabbi Chalap told me that he asked the Rav about this particular question, and the Rav said, hey, look in Tosfos, right, that quotes Rabbi Abraham Hager. So we see that a ger can receive smicha, but that does not necessarily mean that a ger is able to discharge all duties or all different capacities of the rabbinate. If there is a particular capacity that would be Srara, then presumably that might be off limits. It could be that the Rav was of the position that a ger could receive smicha, but couldn't be a community rabbi. I'm not sure about that, although that has certainly been quoted in the name of the Rav. If the Rav held it being president, if the Rav held that being a rabbi was not really a position of a Srara per se, then that would not necessarily be applicable. But even if being a community rabbi is a position of a Srara, nonetheless, it's clear that Rav Moshe held that being a Rosh Yeshiva, being a Rebbe, is not a position of Srara per se. And we do, in fact, confer smicha upon Geirim, although there are limitations. There are things that Geirim can't do in terms of serving as Dayanim for certain purposes, that are important to spell out for somebody who's a ger who receives smicha. So then the question arises, so what then is all of this opposition to the notion of a woman receiving smicha? If, number one, maybe we don't have to necessarily hold like the Rambam, and number two, maybe being a Rav does not necessarily have to carry with it positions of a Sarara. So, of course, there may be other considerations as well. There is a pasuk in Devarim that talks about the appointment of rabbis who are really judges for the community. And Rashi says, and why does it have to say anashim? Once you're appointing for these community positions, you're basically appointing rabbis. Why do you have to spell out anashim? Obviously it's men. Obviously it's not going to be women. So Rashi clearly was onto something, that women are not even in the category of being considered for this particular position. Matam lama anashim tzadikim. Why did it say anashim? So it means righteous men. It means anashim tzadikim, real good anashim, real good men. But not necessarily that there would even be a havamina that one would be able to appoint nashim. So there are articles that discuss this. About 20 years ago, Rav Schechter wrote a lengthy article in the Jewish press on the subject of women being rabbis, explaining why women can't be rabbis, basically explaining the differentiation between public and private roles in halakha, and how there really is a tznius consideration in terms of public roles being something which we don't favor in general. In general, the Gemara in Sukkah says that Hatznei Aleches implies that even with respect to public matters, we're supposed to act modestly. Even with respect to, it says, Tov Aleches El Beis Eved, Lo Bileches El Beis Mishteh, even things such as mourning and wedding celebrations, which are public events, are supposed to be done modestly, Kal Vachomer, everything else. It's just that the specific obligation to serve sometimes in public capacity is something which is handed over only to men, but for women they are spared from this designation, and they're able to live lives which are more fully characterized by tznius based on principles of kol kavuda bas melech benima, and therefore certainly in terms of a public role of the rabbinate, from this tznius perspective, whether you are magdir it based on srara categories or minoi categories or otherwise, would be something generally inappropriate for women to function in. But there also appears to be a clear connection between the institution of smicha and, in fact, what is going on there in Dvarim, the institution of serving as dayanim. So the question of smicha may be much more tied in to the specific question of who is allowed to function as a dayan. And Tosfos, in a number of places, asks the question that since we seem to be under the understanding that a woman does not serve as a dayan, this is based the most obviously on the principle that whomever can't serve as an aide can't serve as a dayan. The Gemara in Shvuah says, "V'amdu shnei anashim." We learn that only men serve as aidim and not women. And therefore, a woman can't serve as a dayan. The Yerushalmi says this even more explicitly, but then it becomes difficult to understand the fact that Deborah was a shofetis, that appears to indicate that Deborah, in fact, served as a dayan. So how do we account for that? So there is, in fact, one teretz of Tosfos, at least explaining, according to the Talmud Bavli, that maybe this principle of whoever is ineligible to serve as a witness can't serve as a dayan is only applicable to men and is not applicable to women. According to that sheet, a woman could serve as a dayan. But Tosfos gives other reasons as well, that Devorah was different because she was appointed through the Shechina, it was Al-Pi Dibor that she was accepted, or alternatively, that she was simply a very scholarly woman. She was Melamedes Lahem Dinim, she taught the Dinim. The Tosfos in Shavuos on Daf Chof Tes and elsewhere gives this answer, that Devorah taught Dinim, Devorah was learned and she taught them Halachos. And therefore, that was not her serving as a dayan. Others served as dayanim, but she was just a wise woman who was able to teach hara'ah, essentially. So based on these different answers of Tosfos, according to the answer that says that she could serve as a dayan, so then if there is an equation between dayan and rabbi, because our musmachim really are continuations of the original musmachim who were supposed to serve as a dayanim, so then there would be a much more serious conversation. However, we don't paskin, we don't hold like that shita of Tosfos. The Shulchan Aruch and Siman Zayin Sif Dalid holds very clearly shapsula ladun, that we do make an extension from the Gzeiros HaKasuv that a woman can't serve as an aide to say she can't serve as a dayan. Women do not serve as a dayanim. And the Rambam is, in fact, pretty explicit when the Rambam talks about what smicha means in Hilchos Sanhedrin Perek Dad Halacha Beis. The Rambam says, "V'ketzad yasmicha l'doros," what is the nature of smicha for all generations? Lo sheyismichu yedei ravosh hazaka, not that you place your hands per se and that you do an action of smicha. Ela shekorin lo rebbe, rather that you call somebody rebbe. V'omim lo harei at samoch, and you say you are now a samoch. And very important detail, v'yesh lecha roshus ladun apilu dinei knasos, and you have the ability to also serve as a dayan. And then the Rambam in Halacha Ches goes further and says that even though you might give somebody a limited smicha, say only give them yore yore and not give them yadin yadin, the person has to be eligible to even serve in a yadin yadin capacity. So, based on this consideration, since a woman cannot serve as a dayan, that would explain very clearly why a woman couldn't receive smicha, though you may ask, so how then does a ger receive smicha? So the answer is, because a ger can't serve as a dayan. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Vav says that when it says that hakol kshem ladun, that everybody is kosher to serve as a dayan, it's lasu yegerim, that it comes to lasu yeger, it comes to include a ger. Aye, but we say that a ger is possible to be a dayan. So a ger is possible to be a dayan in most cases, but the halacha is that a ger doneska as ger chavero, that a convert is allowed to serve as a dayan on a case involving other gerim. There are cases where a ger could serve as a dayan, even though generally a ger can't serve as a dayan, and therefore the world of dayanus is not completely excluded from a ger. There's a little bit of a discussion in the Piskei Uziel as to whether people could accept willingly upon themselves a woman to be a dayan, the same way you can accept other individuals who are not qualified to serve as a dayan. And the Piskei Uziel initially says that it should be okay, but then comes to the conclusion for various psychological, sociological considerations that one might legitimately ask about or legitimately challenge, I suppose. But nonetheless, despite the general tone of accommodation, comes to the conclusion that based on sociological considerations, one would not even be able to be Mikhail, Mikabel, a woman as a dayan. But that's a separate question. the focus with respect to the analogy to smicha is whether a woman is essentially and intrinsically kshera ladun, eligible to serve as a dayan, and he comes and the halacha is that a woman cannot. Now, one would be able to challenge this thesis, although I believe that this really serves for a major explanation as to the age-old practice that we have of not ordaining women. And then, of course, you would have to come to the separate question of whether the rabbinate is a srara, but based on this consideration alone of Dayanus being off limits, this really seems to explain the practice. One could challenge this based on the Ramah in Simen Resh Mem Beis, where the Ramah says that nowadays, since the nature of smicha has changed, that it is essentially a metilas rishus, it's only just a granting of permission for somebody to serve in a capacity of rav, call themselves rabbi, explain halakha, serve as a rebbe, give instruction, harah. So in this limited capacity, the Ramah writes in Simen Resh Mem Beis that you could actually appoint somebody for a partial type of smicha, even though they are not ra'oi for all areas of smicha, even though this is not a person who is ra'oi for all areas of smicha. However, this Ramah is limited, I believe, in several different ways. One, the Ramah is not necessarily talking about a person who could not potentially be eligible in any area, just a person who isn't right now. They haven't received their proficiency, but they could receive proficiency in the other areas as well. And if they did, they could ostensibly be appointed. That's number one limitation. Number two limitation to the Ramah is that the Ramah himself contradicts himself, or at least expresses a contradictory opinion in his tshuvos. In Tshuva Chav Dalet, the Ramah says that it would be very dangerous in our generations to give somebody only a partial smicha if they're not roi for everything, because then the person might abuse the title and might abuse the privilege. And number three, the Aruch HaShulchan notes that despite the fact that the Ramah endorses this position of having somebody with a limited eligibility being granted a limited smicha, the Aruch HaShulchan says very clearly, lo ra'isi noegin kein, he has not seen this practice observed by anybody, and therefore one might invoke the principle of the Shach in Simon Aleph of Yoredeya, that when it comes to the various certain practices, we might say that lo ra'inu havi raya, that the fact that there was a potential of doing something and it was never ever done does indicate that there is a raya, that even with respect to the Ramah's more limited suggestion of creating smicha just for a person doing gittin, which is his particular context, that has not been done. And therefore, to extend this even further would appear to be unwarranted according to our current halakhic rules. So therefore, I do believe that there is still the most compelling argument to be made that the essential analog when it comes to smicha, to the rabbinate, to rabbinic ordination, is dayanus. And once a dayanus is off limits, then smicha becomes off limits. That, of course, aside, there is the separate srara consideration. Meikar hadin, it could be that the tzorach gadol, one might find in an individual case a reason to dance around the Rambam, but Rav Moshe, even Rav Moshe, who indicated that the Rambam was a minority opinion, indicated that one should certainly try to follow the Rambam if there isn't a tzorach gadol otherwise, and certainly as a matter of institutional practice, there's no hint that Rav Moshe would indicate going against the Rambam. Now, one could make the argument that the rabbinate is not actually a position of srara at all, because the rabbis are given a very hard time by their congregants, and sometimes, as some in this room might be able to attest, it really doesn't appear like you have any authority at all. And the principle which was memorialized by Rabban Gamliel when he was appointing two young Talmidei Chachamim to a position of rabbinic authority is apt when he said that you think that Svara ani no sein lachem, you think I'm giving you Svara, ha! Abdus ani nosein lachem, I am giving you slavery and servitude. And it could be that that might be, in fact, a more correct characterization of the function of the rabbinate. Nonetheless, others do go so far as to say that, yes, well, the rabbinate, particularly if you're dealing with the community rabbinate, where you have responsibilities towards the shul, where you make decisions with respect to them, whether they like it or not, is, in fact, in the category of a sarara, even if you would make the argument that serving as a rebbe or a rosh yeshiva is not necessarily in the position of sarara as articulated by Rav Moshe. So in response to the question as to whether women can be rabbis, I think the answer is no. The answer is no, in my opinion, primarily based upon the limitation of Dayanus. And if you look at the essays of Rav Schachter, clearly the notion of public versus private role also factors into this discussion as well. And others bring in practical considerations that a Rav has to discharge many, many roles that clearly can only be performed by men, whether it's the notion of speaking in front of mixed audiences, whether it's making announcements in shul, whether it's in terms of a Rav's ability to lay in the certain aliyas and daven ne'ilah and help make the minyan and a myriad of other functions, which really can halakhically very clearly only be performed by men. Therefore, there is this additional consideration as well that you want to put somebody in the role who is going to be able to assume the functions where there's not going to be a confusion and bilbil with respect to how far you draw the lines. And obviously, this is in addition to all of the other considerations that are mentioned. But we do have one window that appears to have been opened up by Tosfos, and that is this notion that it's legitimate for a woman to be melamedes lahem dinim, for a woman to teach halachos to others. And if you look in the Sefer HaChinuch clearly writes that this is something which is within the purview of what women can do. Because the Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Kuf Nun Beis says that Be'isha Chachama Haru'uya Lahoros, that she is also subject to the restrictions against getting drunk, because one should not give a psak halakha when they're drunk. And the Sefer HaChinuch says this also applies to an Isha Chachama Haru'uya Lahoros, indicating that this is a legitimate enterprise. And in fact, the Pesachei Tshuva in Choshen Mishpat Siman Zayin says explicitly that after Isha Psula Ladun, even though a woman is Psula Ladun, which I would extend as also meaning she can't be ordained as a rabbi, Mikol Makom, Isha Chachama Yechola Lahoros Hara'ah. Nonetheless, a wise woman is allowed to give Hara'os. V'chem Isbar Me'a Tosfos, and he quotes the Tosfos, and he also quotes the Sefer HaChinuch along these lines. So then the question becomes, so what then about women who are trained to be yo'atzot? Does that perhaps become justified by this function which is legitimized by Tosfos and which is legitimized by the Pesachei Tshuva? And what about this whole enterprise of women learning Torah altogether? So the Mishnah in Sota, as we know, places limitations. It says that a father who teaches his daughter Torah has taught her tiflus. Does anybody here know how to define the word tiflus? So let's just say tiflus isn't a very good thing. So a father appears to be warned against teaching his daughter a Torah. And the Gemara explains it's not that he's actually teaching her tiflus, it's ki'ila lomda tiflus, it's as if she's teaching her tiflus. And the Rambam, when he codifies this halacha in Hilchos Talmud Torah, says that this is basically because of the fact that the majority of women who are going to be taught Torah are not going to be able to have it to develop their appreciation of Torah. And that is the reason for the restriction. And the Rambam says it only applies to Torah Shebaal Peh, the restriction, but they can be taught Torah Shebichtav. The Prisha in Siman Reish Mem Vav on this halacha as it is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, very much patterned after the Lashon of the Rambam. So the Prisha says, however, if you do have a woman who is lamda li'atzma, that she learns on her own, and she has been able to reach a degree of erudition, not being taught by her father, but just because she is self-motivated. So such a woman certainly clearly has been yatsa min harov, has emerged from the majority. So we see the way that the halacha is incorporated, it allows for certain exceptions. And the Torah Tamima, in his commentary to Parshas Ekev, quotes from a sefer Mayan Ganim, and says that those women that Asher Nadva Liban Osana, that lifting, paraphrasing from the Torah, those women whose spirits have elevated them to really become interested in gaining a proficiency in learning, whom he describes as Neshei Mofes Hena, as the women of great wonder who have agreed, who have, despite the fact that the educational system wasn't addressed to teach them Torah, have emerged as Torah scholars. He goes further to indicate that there is even an obligation to provide for instruction and encouragement and support for such women. From the Lashon of the Prisha, there isn't necessarily an indication that one has a any type of hider to become a Rebbe for a woman who is so self-motivated, only that it is legitimate for her to learn on her own if she is self-motivated. But from this Mayan Ganim, the Lashon is Ve'al Chachmei Doron Le'Adron Le'Hadron L'Sadron L'Chazik Yedein Le'Ameitz Ve'Oseyen, that they have to be clearly supported. This would indicate even more of an obligation to provide educational facilities and opportunities for such a woman. And the Chafetz Chaim, in his commentary to Likutei Halachos on Masechta Sota, one of the lesser known works of the Chafetz Chaim, has an astonishing footnote in which the Chafetz Chaim says on the limitations of teaching women Torah as recorded in the Gemara and Sota. The Chafetz Chaim says, "V'chol ze b'doros shelefanenu shekabalos ha'avos haya chazak me'od." Says this is only applicable to previous generations where a woman was able to learn the Torah principles that she needed within her father's home. However, nowadays the women go out and they learn languages and they learn secular subjects on their own, and they're being exposed to a different type of lifestyle, a different type of world, and becoming educated in that world. It is a mitzvah. Rabbah, he says, lamdam, they have to be, it is a tremendous mitzvah to provide educational institutions. This was a justification or validation, if you will, of the Beis Yaakov movement, to teach them Chumash, Gamnach, and Musrei Chazal, to teach them Chumash, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, Musrei Chazal, and so forth. And and Rav Soloveitchik himself, in a letter penned in 1953, went further when asked about the appropriate type of instruction to give women who are being educated to get together with men, or girls who are being educated together with boys. And this is in these letters were reprinted in a volume called Community Covenant. There are three words, but I have it here. Community. Do I have it here? Covenant and commitment. Yes, so the Rav there, in a letter to this Rabbi Leonard Rosenfeld, said that, first he was asked to write about this issue, and he said that he doesn't want it to be thrown into the fray of some political mess, and he doesn't want his words to be used to contribute to what he calls a either a liberalization of the law, or those who would want to see halacha fossilized and doesn't want to play into anybody else's agenda. So he would only answer the question if he was promised that they would listen to whatever he said. I guess that his request was granted, because some months later he wrote a letter to Rabbi Rosenfeld, even saying, "Please accept my apologies for not answering your letter sooner," and then says, "I expressed my opinion to you long ago that it would be a very regrettable oversight on our part if we were to arrange separate Hebrew courses for girls. Not only is the teaching of Torah Shebaal Peh to girls permissible, but it is nowadays an absolute imperative. This policy of discrimination between the sexes as to subject matter and method of instruction, which is still advocated by certain groups within our Orthodox community, has contributed greatly to the deterioration and downfall of traditional Judaism. Boys and girls alike should be introduced into the inner halls of Torah Shebaal Peh." If I said it, I get myself into a lot of trouble, but I am just quoting the Rav in this volume to give a proper attribution. The volume was compiled, the various letters by Rabbi Nanny Helfgott, but in this volume, which appears to be clear letters that were penned by the Rav does record the sentiment. It was known that the Rav himself taught a shiur, taught the first shiur in Gemara that was given to women at Stern College. The Rav's feeling was that it became an absolute imperative. You find this similar lashon echoed by his son-in-law, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Yibal Del Chaim Tovim, that where he writes that it is desirable and necessary to provide intensive education, even from Torah Shebaal Peh, with respect to women. One possible explanation of this, which I believe is beautifully rendered by Rav Twersky in the piece that I included in the materials, is that we distinguish between what is optional instruction to women to necessary instruction to women. In a society where the women are receiving high-level secular education, being exposed to all that, it becomes necessary as a matter of proper education in order to instill a proper set of knowledge and also a proper set of values and commitment, as Rav Aaron Lichtenstein spells out, to provide for a higher level education, and particularly for those women who are self-motivated anyway, where the Prisha draws a distinction between the teaching, I guess, forcing optional instruction upon a woman, and a woman on her own being self-motivated. So when a woman has, so there certainly is encouragement for a woman who has the ability, has the inspiration, has the inclination to become well-versed on a high level in all of Torah learning, Torah Shebiktav, Torah Shebaal Peh, certainly with respect to inyanim that pertain to her halacha l'maisa, which he's obligated to know. If a woman reaches a level in which she can be mara hara, so then the Piskei Tshuva clearly seems to endorse this. That does not necessarily end the question or the inquiry with respect to the propriety of the position of Yo Atzot, because one could still arguably draw a distinction between a learned woman who is serving in this capacity informally and a woman actually being appointed by the community to a particular position, which is, as we mentioned, something that appears to have been frowned upon by the Rav. So there is the possibility of drawing that distinction. If one doesn't, however, then this would appear to provide at least a halakhic basis for a position which certainly by its very nature appears not to constitute a srara, because the very term Yo Atzot implies Shua Barav Yoetz, somebody who is consulting with others. And in fact, if you look at the formulation of the Tosfos in Nida with respect to Devorah serving as in this capacity, so the Tosfos in Nida actually adds an extra word, that is that when it says that in the answer of Tosfos that she was, excuse me, not the Tosfos in Nida, the Tosfos in Yevamos, a Meme Amud Beis, that Dvora was not Dona, but rather was Melamedes Lahen, where she was teaching to them. So Tosfos adds the word sheyadunu, that they themselves would serve as the ultimate dayonim. And this would appear to justify the more traditional paradigm that I believe has been set up when there have been Yo Atzot situations here in the United States, of a woman of this proficiency being serving in the capacity of advising women with respect to halakhic matters, but ultimately with the ultimate purpose of sheyadunu, that those who are the ordained rabbis, those who are the rabbanim of the communities, are the ones who are essentially supervising and issuing the final psak in the matter. So while there is flexibility depending on how you understand the different opinions, this model appears to be the one that would be the most substantiated, at least according to the traditional sources. But there is something else at play which is very important to note and very important to consider as well in terms of this general discussion. And that is that one has to consider just the ramifications that are at play. On the one hand, sort of the earliest discussion of smicha lenashim is not giving smicha to women, but women giving smicha when they would do the avoda on, or when they would bring a korban in the Beis Hamikdash, and that's the Gemara in Chagiga Daf Tezayin, and the Gemara says that even though women are not included in the obligation of smicha. They would allow women to do some type of imitation smicha, some type of imitation placing of their hands on the animal in the ezras nashim, presumably kedei lasos nachas ruach lenashim, in order to provide nachas ruach, in order to give them a feeling of greater participation and therefore greater happiness and fulfillment through participation. And it is in fact on that Gemara that Tosfos notes that this is a source for our notion that even though women are exempt from the performance of mitzvahs esei she'azman groma, of time-bound commandments, nonetheless we allow women to make brachos, at least that's the Ashkenazic custom, on a time-bound commandments. And the source that Tosfos derives this from is that very same Gemara of kedei lasos nachas ruach lenashim, that there is an inyan of lasos nachas ruach lenashim, of enabling all members of our community, and women should not be ignored. Particularly, the focus is on women because they're otherwise limited in terms of what they're obligated to do, but to the extent that it gives them a greater sense of spiritual belonging and fulfillment to belong, then there is a notion of being sensitive and considerate of that factor. And in fact, the Piskei Uziel utilizes this expression in his Tshuva, in which he justifies the notion of women participating in general elections, which was a very hot button topic going back many decades ago among the Gedolei Poskim at that time. And he came out in favor of women being allowed to vote. Rav Kook came out against it. He came out in favor of it. One of his considerations, after he shows that it's not really a problem of Srora and so forth, is that he says you also have to be sensitive. If something can essentially be justified according to halakhic tradition and will more likely enhance the feeling of spiritual fulfillment of the women and make them more excited about their ability to contribute to community and therefore enhance the general level of Torah and Shmiras HaMitzvos and Yiras Shamayim for the entire community, that is in fact something to be taken into account. On the other hand, on the opposite side of the spectrum, one also has to reckon with the concern that sometimes when you allow certain practices, you're actually perhaps making inroads into improper practices making their way into the community, into the notion of people being motivated by insincere intentions or paving the way for outright violations of halacha or for orthodoxy as we know it today, to become very seriously, chas v'shalom, compromised in terms of its halakhic integrity. And therefore you find this balancing act within the poskim between trying to find the right accommodations on the one hand and also on the other hand trying not to make accommodations to the degree that it's going to lead to a weakening of the tradition. And one of the best case studies with respect to this nuanced discussion and tension is with respect to women saying Kaddish, where the question is first discussed by the Chavos Yair a few hundred years ago, of a man who actually made a tzivoy before he died, since he didn't have any sons, that his daughter should say Kaddish, not in the context of a shul, in the context of a learning group of a minyan that would take place. And then at the end of the learning group that would take place, she would get up in front of 10 men and she would say Kaddish. And the Chavos Yair says that really this would create the same type of benefit for the soul of the deceased as when a boy says Kaddish for his father. But at the same time, he paskin against doing it because he did not, because he said that this would be shloyakashu minagi Yisrael, that this would allowing this inroad, shall we say, of a woman serving in this capacity, which appears to be on the borderline of kind of like a public sort of capacity, is something which should not be countenanced because of the fact that it could cause a general weakening of Minhagei Yisrael. And he even focuses in the Lashon of his Tshuva on the fact that this is a place of asifa upirsum. It's a kind of public appearance by the woman, and therefore we don't want to be yachlashu koach haminhagim, in his words, and in his words that we're worried that kol echad yibneh bama le'atzmo, everybody will build their own mizbeach, everybody will build their own methodology towards how they go about observing the religion. So there were a number of different shuvas speaking about under what settings it might be modest enough, it might be appropriate, might not be appropriate. Some distinguish between young girls and older girls, like the Gesher HaChaim, for example, who said that if a woman is, she's a woman, then for sure it's off limits. If it's a young girl, then accommodations can be made. So Rav Henkin, of Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, in a famous essay that I reprinted for you because I feel you should see it inside, that was published in Hapardes Journal, which was the sixth issue of Hapardes Journal in 1963. Rapenkin first wrote an introduction as to how Kaddish is not merely the mouthing of words, but is intended to bring a higher level of Ma'asim Tovim and Torah and Tefillah and Tzedakah. And the whole idea of Kaddish is that we're looking to inspire the children to follow in the ways of Torah, and that has to be the context in which we discuss Kaddish. But in the context of the specific question of whether a daughter could say Kaddish for her father, and Rav Henkin does not explicitly, from what I could tell, limit the discussion to a daughter who has no brothers, and does not limit the discussion to a daughter who is a young girl who does not have, who is not above the age of 12, but is just talking about a daughter in general terms. And he writes that if we're talking about a woman who is herself a tznua, she acts in a fashion of tara and snia, she's observant, and she wants to say Kaddish in front of the women at the same time that a man says Kaddish in front of the men. So he answers that efshar she'ein kepeda, that it is possible that this is not a problem. That's his formulation. We can't go beyond his formulation. This formulation certainly was sufficient to give the authorization for those who wanted to conduct this practice. But to the extent that you see in Orthodox synagogues today that sometimes a woman will say Kaddish in the women's section while the men are saying Kaddish in the men's section, and even sometimes the woman will say Kaddish if there's no man who immediately starts saying Kaddish, there'll be a scramble to find the man to say Kaddish. This is really based upon the formulation of Rav Henkin. But this formulation of Rav Henkin really did meet from resistance. Rav Shlomo Warman writes in his, by the way, I'm hoping that will come here after Pesach to give a shiur to the Kollel. I spoke to him a little while ago. So he writes in his sefer, the Shevis Yosef, that he was personally uncomfortable with this tshuva of Rav Henkin, and the reason he was uncomfortable, besides quoting authorities that were more severe, who worried about Kolisha, and otherwise worried about the general tznius norms, he's worried and he had a halakha consideration, which is articulated also in the Minchas Yitzchak, and also you'll find in Rav Schechter's essay, I believe, of Tzilach Mikvei Atzon, that just as a practical matter, since Kaddish is a Davish Shebekdusha and a woman is not a Mitzurah to a minion of 10, therefore she can't be Motziya Sarabim, so for technical reasons he was opposed to it as well. But he writes that he also has a sociological concern that this will cause the Misbolales Manenu, those who are looking, the assimilationists among us, to say Kfar Hitiru Prushim Es Adavar, that we see even the from rabbis are permitting us to do the things that we want to do. Aha, now we're going to start doing all of our other plans, which are anti-halacha, V'yasu Dvarim Acherim Letzarif Nashim Dvarim Shebikdusha, and they'll just start making women's minyanim, or other things which don't work according to halacha. And therefore, and he says that he mentioned his opposition to Rabbi Eliezer Silber, his Rebbe. He learned by Rabbi Eliezer Silber, is one of the major American poskim in the middle part, I guess, of the 20th century. And he says Rabbi Eliezer Silber agreed with his concerns and indicated that he himself had articulated his concerns to Rav Henkin in opposition to the conclusion that was drawn by Rav Henkin. On the other side, though, you find in a much lesser known shuva by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, there is actually a sefer, a small sefer, called Od Yisrael Yosef Ben Ichai, that was published by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik with psakim and essays of his relating to Hilchos Avelus. So in an essay that he wrote about Hilchos Kaddish, at the end of that essay, after quoting the Chavos Yair, he says that if we would prevent women who really, sincerely want to say Kaddish from being able to fulfill this function, then he's worried about the opposite effect, that this lack of Nachas Ruach L'Nashim, shall we say, will cause them to be more influenced by the other movements, cause them to stray from orthodoxy. It will be Yisra'a be'ashpas ha'reformim. So therefore, he says, if that is the concern, or since he holds that that is a concern, that they will be influenced away from mainstream orthodoxy, therefore, asur limnoa bas milo merkadish. Therefore, he concludes that for this reason, it is prohibited to stop somebody who genuinely and sincerely wants to say Kaddish in shul from being able to say Kaddish. So here you see, looking at the Sheris Yosef on the one hand and looking at Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's writings on the other hand, this tension, this sort of absolute tension between the two different poles of to what degree we worry about how, when an innovation is going to lead to more perhaps undesirable and anti-halakhic innovations, and when it is, then not allowing a certain accommodation will perhaps have a counterproductive effect where you have to bend a little bit. These are very difficult shikulim, very difficult cheshbonos for one to be able to make, and certainly for a young rav dealing with situations in their community. You have the good fortune that some of these hachros have already been made by gedolei poskim shelefaneinu, but at the same time, it shows the tremendous importance of regular consultation with one's rebbeim, with the gedolim of today, when dealing with a particular situation that might face yourself or might face your community, in terms of dealing with the situation sensitively and appropriately and correctly, in order to draw people closer and nearer to a Torah v'Yirah Shemayim, and not to cause chas v'sholom and unraveling. Along these lines, in the famous essay that was published by Roshech, you'll find the Big Fei Atzon, together with the famous letter signed by the five Ritz Roshei Yeshiva, which is also found in the same article, which dealt with women's prayer groups and the propriety of introducing new practices and some of the halakha considerations, but lots and lots of the other mega halakha considerations, considering when we introduce new minhagim and things of that variety. So he quotes from both the Nitziv and the Chassam Sofer about how when there is the innovation of new practices, even if it seems to be consistent with halakhic norms, it absolutely requires a consultation with Gedolim in order to be able to ascertain that, first of all, the kavanos are appropriate. Rav Moshe writes in a famous Chuvin, Or Chaim Chelik Dal Simon Mem Tes, that even the volunteering of mitzvah esei shehazman grama depends upon appropriate kavanah. If it's being done l'shem shemayim, it's a mitzvah. If it's being done in order to push some anti-halakhic agenda, then it's an avera. One has to very carefully assess the kavanah with respect to new practices. That's the distinction that Nitziv draws between some, when it is that a lomet shelo lishma is commended because it's bali de shema, and when somebody who is a lomet shelo lishma is condemned by the Gemara. So the Nitziv says that the distinction is essentially when you're dealing with learning that which is normally learned and practicing that which is normally practiced. So then even if it's shelo lishma, it automatically has kedusha, it automatically has value. You're supposed to do it anyway, so it would automatically edify and inspire you. But if it's something which is innovative, either an innovative thought or an innovative practice, which is not so clearly defined as something which you're supposed to do, so then if it's shelo lishma, so then you have a major problem on your hands. And that is, you know, when the lomet shelo lishma is essentially clearly condemned in the Gemara. So the same applies to when we figure out the expansion of roles and the introduction of new practices. These principles have to be guiding us as well. The other areas where this is applicable, some of the areas where this is applicable is, number one, with respect to to aliyos, women's aliyos. Here, I think that if you look at Rav Zalman Nechemyah Goldberg, you look at some of the other recent writings on the subject, I mean, you look at you look at the Sefer Kriya Satova Bilchoseh, which also talks about this issue. The Gemara in Megillah says that Hakol Ona Minyan Shiva Afilu Nashim, that even women could theoretically get an aliyah. However, we do not give aliyahs to women in Pnei Kavod Atzibor. Because of Kavod Atzibor, aliyahs are considered to be off limits to women. And the question is, so is that something which is at all flexible? It says, so the formulation by the Rambam is not that Hakol Olin, but simply he has Isha Lotikra B'Torah B'nei Kavod Atzibor. So Zalman Nechemyah says that this is based on Tznius considerations, that a woman doesn't get an aliyah, even though theoretically it would have been possible if not for the Tznius considerations. Once you have the Tznius considerations, therefore it is off limits and is not something which can ever be countenanced and is not something which can ever be allowed. And the question becomes, what do you do when, in fact, there is a movement of this sort? And how do you deflect any type of legitimate requests to be included in this fashion? So the answer is, you have to be armed with the mekoros and with the clear ability to explain them and to provide for the right types of opportunities. The Bach says that when something is prohibited for kavod atzibor, and he specifically identifies this halacha, it's lo nitan the mechila. It's the Bach in the Siman Nun Gimel in Or HaChaim. It's not something which can, in fact, be forgiven. And therefore, women's aliyos, even according to those who took a more flexible approach, there's a sefer you should know about called the B'nai Banim, because there are those who kind of rely upon approaching Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin, who's the mechaber of that sefer, to present some of these more contemporary issues. And I think that his general approach is to find ways to accommodate, but he himself is sensitive to the fact that there are certain issues that really define orthodoxy as we know it. So he does quote a Mordechai in Gittin, which says that if you have an ir shekula kohanim, you can give the first two aliyas a kohanim, and then afterwards you can even call up nashim. It's not brought down halacha lemaisa. He wants to argue that perhaps the entire issue is circumscribed by when it is considered a me'ira to a community, as the Ritva writes in the Megillah Daf Dalet, that the notion of the limitation of women's roles in certain respects is when it would be an embarrassment that men aren't able to do it, but perhaps when that factor is not at play or there's nothing that's being discharged, maybe this is not pertinent. But he writes, at least in Chelik Pace of his Chuvos, that if you are going to allow this, he says it will be a Pesach L'Mizbo'olim, where you'll be opening up the door for those the assimilationists. And that should be the end of the story. And if you have a tzibor that allows women to be called up, then they would essentially be defining themselves outside of orthodoxy, which is what leaves me to be a little bit confused about some of the wiggle room that he at least suggested in Chelek Dalet of his sefer. But I think that probably the more true, sound articulation, in my opinion, is this articulation from Chelek Beis. And as I mentioned, certainly from the Lashon of the Rambam, it does appear that this is a proposition that is non-negotiable. For the last 2 minutes, we just mentioned the notion of Megillah readings. The Gemara in Masechet Megillah Daf Dalet says that a woman is included with respect to Kriyas HaMegillah. And the Tosfos over there quotes that appears from the Gemara that a woman would be able to even be motzia a men for purposes of Kriyas HaMegillah, but also quotes the Bahag as basically saying that this is not countenanced because of the fact that we don't allow a woman to be motzia men. And it's explained, the Bahag is explained elsewhere in another Tosfos, also by the Rosh, because the Bahag held that the nature of the chiyuv of women is different, because the woman has a chiyuv shmia and the men have a chiyuv kriya. But then the question is, can a woman be motzia multiple nashim? So the Korban Nisanel, based on a Tosfos in Sukkah Daf Lamed Ches, comes to the conclusion that it would be zila b'hu milsa, that it would be the apparent definition is that it would be a violation of tznius norms for a woman to exempt a men when it comes to the reading of the Megillah. And this is brought down by the Mishnah Berurah in the Shaar HaTzion of zila b'hu milsa, and is also mentioned by the Mishnah Berurah in the context of Kiddush, that even though a woman is allowed to make Kiddush, nonetheless, a woman should not make Kiddush for people who are not Mibnei Beisa, because it also would be zila b'hu milsa. Again, we have this notion of certain tznius norms that are articulated according to halacha. Nonetheless, you find that in a zimun context, I copied for you from the Sefer Halichos Beisa, which does allow for the notion of women being able to make a zimun. We know the halacha is women are mizamnos la'atzman, nashim mizamnos la'atzman v'shus. They have the option to do so. What if you have a meal where there are three women who are eligible for zimun age and you don't have three men? Are they allowed to make a zimun in the presence of the men? So the Halichos Beisa holds that this is legitimate, that is something which they are able to do. That there is room for allowing for this expression of religious participation to this effect when we're dealing with women who are generally mizamnos for themselves. He quotes with Shlomo Zalman Orbach as having endorsed this practice, which is also very interesting. Shlomo Zalman Orbach was his uncle. And finally, in the context of bat mitzvah celebrations, we find a divergence of opinion there as well, with Rav Moshe writing that this is only a sudas rishus, because it's not nikkur when a woman becomes, when a girl becomes bat mitzvah, her new obligation, since she's not called up to the Torah, not nikkur, therefore it doesn't give rise to a full sudas mitzvah. You can make a birthday party, it's not a sudas mitzvah. And also here as well, Rav Moshe worries about whether we are imitating those who, the practices of less observant movements, and that the observance would actually take away from Shmiras HaMitzvos. And the Sri Deyesh, on the other side of the spectrum, says that we should encourage this type of Asuda to the degree that it reinforces a girl with respect to her Shmiras HaMitzvos. There's an interesting pshara between the views, which you'll find in Rabbi Willick's Sefer of Am Mordechai, where Rabbi Willick says, well, when a boy becomes bar mitzvah, so the father is fulfilling an obligation that he has raised him in accordance with Torah, l'matem osam es b'nechem, and therefore the father invites a very large group of people who are friendly with the family. But when it's a bat mitzvah celebration, since the father had no obligation of chinuch upon, of teaching Torah to the girl, so therefore it's not the parents' celebration, it's just the girl's celebration, so therefore it's appropriate to have a party the way that children have parties, where they just invite their friends and close family members. But what's interesting is that both Rav Moshe and the Sri Deyesh clearly agreed that the celebration should not take place in a sanctuary of the synagogue, because in this respect they both share the concern that if you're pushing the envelope that far in terms of resembling a bar mitzvah celebration, there could be more of an agenda at play. And this also just underscores again the range of different opinions, possibilities. But I would like to say that fundamentally we don't really have a machlokas. It's sometimes just a question of what's appropriate in given settings, what really is the agenda, what really is going to be the outcome, what are the ramifications, is it going to lead to a greater enhancement of Torah, Yiras Shemayim, community participation. That's something that we endorse. We very much want that, we very much encourage that, and we very much respect all of the efforts of women who truly are Yirei Shemayim to be able to have spiritual fulfillment within appropriate parameters. And this is why, in order to make appropriate determinations in given cases, it is so important for us to be, number one, sensitive to all these issues, number two, aware of all of the sources and all of the various nuances. And you'll see in the sources materials relating to some other inyanim as well. And number three, how essential it is that we fulfill the precept of Shalabicha v'yageitcha zikeinecha v'yomulach, to consult with our rebbeim, with our poskim, to make sure that we calibrate this balance correctly. Thank you very much. Can we still make mitzvah? I think so. I think we've run down now. We can make it. Yeah.